Episode 34 to the Mini PC Show. My name is Brian Thomas, and here with Dor and Rich. Boys, how are you today?
Doing good.
Doing crazy. It's the day before a holiday. Today is Wednesday, yet for my work, it was my Monday, and I got to go back to work
here.
On Friday.
Yes.
The real Friday.
The working day after the holiday is never fun.
No, but hopefully it's going to be really quiet because everyone's going to be away taking their leave, and I'll actually be able to be productive and get things done. At least that's the goal.
When I was an FTE, that if I didn't have to travel for Thanksgiving, that I wanted to work Friday because then I got stuff done.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, kind of like I used to enjoy not carpooling and getting there as early as sometimes 6 or 6:30 when the place doesn't open up till 8:30. I could get literally 2 hours worth of work done and be really satisfied with the rest of the day because I knew I accomplished things.
Right.
Well, I am so sorry to say that Eric could not join us today. He was having some technical difficulties, but I look forward to having him among us on the next show.
I personally blame his Google Home for completely wrecking his home network and messing up all of his... For literally 3 weeks in a row, he goes down to podcast, and his Windows computer says installing Windows updates. It was isn't supposed to only happen once a month? But I don't know.
See, what always bothered me about the Windows world is, like, it says, you know, installing updates, don't shut down. Well, what if your flight is departing?
Yes.
What do I do?
You shut that clamshell and you move on.
It's like,
Well, how to say, that's why I was always a fan of creating images and restoring images, because I was the guy who could break anything. And at work, for instance, they give me a Windows computer and they expect within a year it's not going to boot anymore just because I break stuff.
Well, since you brought up images, imaging a Pi device has been very helpful to me, so I could revert back to a, you know, last saved state. I haven't been real religious about it, but I have been, you know, putting images on my hard drive of, you know, the current working state of some of my Pi devices, which has been very helpful.
Yeah. The only thing I wish you could do is if there was some kind of pre-boot environment, you could image your Pi over the network without taking the SD card out.
Right.
That would be like the perfect piece of hardware. I would happily pay $10 for that functionality alone, because I'm guessing, Richard, like me, in the process of getting a Pi set up to a satisfactory stance, it's going to break. Only question is are you going to have to go through the process 2, 3, 4, 5 or more times to get it right? Where if you did images each time, you could take a step closer instead of having to restart from scratch.
Remote installation for a Raspberry Pi. That would be very ideal. Yeah.
EXE boot.
Yeah, that will definitely help. But I will say Richard has to talk about some other things besides Raspberry, and we're going to talk about Up. Now, we talked about Upboard more than a couple times on this cast in the last month. Richard bit the bullet and went out and got one of the original Upboards, or two of the original Upboards, and you've actually been playing with yours for at least, what, 5 days now?
Yeah, it's a longer-term dive or a longer-term swim, it has been a deep dive. But there's a couple of issues with the Upboard. And when I say issues, meaning in very generic, not casting positive or negative. One of the things is I live in Florida. My office, not that it's a small office, but when I run my 2009 mini tower, it's noisy and it heats the place up pretty good. And I just don't want to turn it on. So I'll walk around the house with my MacBook Pro and I'll slide, even though I have two 21-inch monitors, I'll slide the keyboard aside and I'll put my Mac there because I don't want to turn the computer on. One, because it takes a while to turn on, and two, heat and noise, or three, heat, noise, and electric. So the other push for the Upboard, I usually have more than one reason before I make a purchase, unless it's a real impulse purchase, like another thing I'll probably be talking about. The Upboard solves a couple of problems. I initially was interested in x86 board. Now, it's not exactly the form factor of a Raspberry Pi, like a Pi 2, Pi 3. It does have a heat sink on the bottom, which I haven't tried putting it in a Pi case, but it looks to me like it wouldn't exactly fit. And there are some different ports, which I don't mind, you know, getting a drill or a Dremel out and opening them up. So my reason for the upboard is, one, it's an x86, which means Crash Plan has been stuck at 4.7 on the Raspberry Pis. I think it's a Java issue, and Crash Plan's up to 4.8. Now, I have a couple of Crash Plan servers running on a Banana Pi Pro, a Pi 3, and I actually tried it on a Pi Zero. It's crazy slow. It works, but it's crazy slow. And I wanted to put one remote, so this solves that. If it's an x86 board, I can run, you know, Ubuntu, whatever, put it at my in-law's house, and have, you know, current updates on Crash Plan without issue. Because there's a slight bit of hacking, and I don't want to call it hacking, but it's a slight bit of hacking to get Crash Plan to run on a Pi device. The other thing is, you can actually run VMware on it. So that's a pretty cool factor. The third thing is, like I've been alluding to, and as I said, it's been a long swim. It hasn't been a deep dive. I've had it plugged into my desktop monitor. Now, only one monitor, and probably the only negative that I've encountered so far that I'm like, oh, I can't do fill in the blank, is I'll play a YouTube video and it has HDMI audio out. Now, I probably could reach into my bag or box of tricks somewhere, and I have, you know, two boxes of stuff, and pull out a USB audio card and plug it in, and then plug my speakers into that and have audio. But, you know, movie playback from my Plex server, which is a Banana Pi M3 octa-core, was fine. I was really liking it. And just before the show started, because of wiring and distances and lengths and stuff like that, in my data center in a drawer, I had a Raspberry Pi 3 I wasn't doing anything with, and I wanted to run OctoPi on it and hook that to a 3D printer, but I was using an extension cable. It wasn't making the connection. So what I did was, I have a gig switch on my desk, and that the upboard is plugged into, and I plugged into the USB port of the upboard and plugged that, using that to power the Pi 3, and then plugged the Pi 3, a webcam and the printer into the USB ports on the Pi 3. It booted, everything worked, it connected to the webcam on OctoPi. I can control the printer through a web interface. So I was kind of giggling about that. I'm like, ooh, I got that solved, because I'm using the upboard, you know, not basically daisy chaining power through it, because I didn't have another wall wart kicking around for it. So, and actually no more spots on the power strip. So that saved my power issue. And the other thing, my in-laws, it's a combo modem router from Comcast, and it has a USB port on it. And I'm wondering, my plan was to put the Pi 3 with a notebook external drive, so there's no power connection on that. If I could plug that into their router, get USB power to it, and then plug Ethernet into one of the four Ethernet ports on it, I've got it powered up and running. So that was my plan for a remote Crash Plan at my in-laws, and, you know, kind of a, you know, compact device without extra power cables, etc. Realistically, there'd be two cables, the power and the Ethernet. That's it. So the upboard, what I'm thinking about doing, and so this is still mini PC if I talk about Intel Nooks, NUC. I'm thinking that I don't want a desktop computer anymore. And the upboard powers up in moments, and I'm not finding a good reason to power it down, because it draws so little current. It doesn't make any noise. It's not heating up my office. I haven't turned it off. I've had maybe more than a dozen tabs open in Chrome, and that didn't seem to dog it down. The only thing I had an issue with bringing it down was I was downloading like four torrents simultaneously, and that slowed it down, where the cursor wasn't moving And once the torrent stopped downloading, everything ran fine. I was going to try an SSH into it and run top and see what was going on, but I didn't do that at the time. That's the only time I was like, all right, this thing sucks. You know, I had a resource issue, but that was while I had more than a dozen tabs open in Chrome. I think I had two different windows with like a dozen tabs open in one and like four tabs open in another. So it's more than reasonable to run as a desktop or thin client if you're doing web app type stuff. This one has 4 gigs of RAM and 32 gigs of, what do they call it?
EMMC.
EMMC.
Yeah, like baked on SSD drive kind of thing.
Is it SSD-like or SD-like?
It's supposed to be SSD-like.
Okay.
Speeds with EMMC are all over the board. I'll say that. What the one thing I would be, honestly, okay, now, really quick. Did you mention what distro you installed on this?
What is it? It's their spin on Ubuntu. I got to look it up. It's
okay. Well, I asked just because I don't remember if you said there. And this is the thing. This is x86, which means technically, even if you wanted to, you could install a Windows derivative if you wanted. If you're really a sadist.
So what I was thinking, I mean, I've got my netbook still. Actually, I have two netbooks. And what I was thinking about was my netbook, I have dual booting XP and Snow Leopard. I'm like, holy cow, I probably could have it as a Mac Mini. You know, basically something the size of a Pi, you know, a Pi 2, Pi 3, and running the Mac OS on it. I haven't tried that because I've had, you know, the 3D printer distraction here.
I think it's Ubuntu 14.04, which is the 4.2.0 kernel that the UP community is supporting on that board.
I think it's Ubiquity, they call it, or I'm trying to look for the...
U-B-I-L-I-N-U-X.
U-B. U-B Linux. That's it, U-B Linux. U-B Linux. Correct.
And that's the whole thing to me. I'm an ARM fan. I'm an ARM fanboy. I'm an ARM fanboy. But the simplicity of knowing this is x86, so everything you can do on your desktop and your laptop, functionally you can do on this thing as well, that's kind of appealing because, I'm not running Slackware or Arch on my rigs down here for a reason. There's some things I just want to work and I don't want to hassle with kind of thing. And this upboard using UB Linux or even Windows, to be honest, interests me greatly, because and honestly, if Rich is saying this is desktop like that's he's not going to approach that without beating it up hard. So for him to say that's a pretty impressive state. I will say there is also UEFI firmware updates, not just OS download, you can do on this board. And it has USB 3.0.
Oh, yeah, it's USB 3.0 OTG, which I plugged a 5 terabyte external drive into, you know, just seeing what it can do. And
right.
So pretty much anything, think of it as a modern, netbook. What you could do with your netbook, when did I get the netbook? 2009, 2010? So think of it that way. Wait, was the netbook? Yeah, it might have been 2008 that I got it.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm thinking, the level of power, and just bring that up to modern day, because, and again, I'd have to look at the spec. I think it's one quad-core Atom 1.9 gigahertz. Am I right on that?
That sounds right, yes. I was looking at the specs, but then I got distracted by going to up-community.org and looking at some of those links there. Yeah, I did have the specs right in front of me.
Yeah,
and that's one
community.
Of the things that I like about this board is that you can get different grades of specs. If you want as little as 1 gig of RAM, you can get that. If you want as much as 4, you can get that. It's an Intel Atom X5 1.92 in turbo for the processor, quad core CPU. So yeah, I mean you're not going to play the latest greatest first person shooter. But with that processor in it, you should be able to do a good deal. And like Rich doing the browser thing, I'm sorry, I'm still firmly believing the browser test is the hardest normal thing for any computer now to pass. because the browser does so much
stuff. So if you're, like I said, if you're using this as a thin client that you're going to be using Google Docs or something like that remotely, this is a no-brainer. You know, just throw it, get a Pi case, stick it on the back of your monitor, just use it. So I said there was one problem. The only other problem I hit was, unlike every other Pi device, it doesn't take power from a mini HDMI. It's a Canon connector, so it's a 5.5mm Canon connector, which, you know, I thought I had every connector known to man. So I got the board Friday. Actually, I picked it up at FedEx because I was out of town. I was mailing Pi Zeros out to some people. And so on the way, I'm like, well, wait a second. I told Dora's going to give him one. And I didn't even go home. I just went to the post office, boom, threw it in a mailer, sent Dora one of the upboards, went home. And then I'm looking around and I'm like, I don't have anything to power this with. And I'm running through my office in the boxes of stuff. And, you know, here's my policy for devices that have a wall wart. Is I put all of the cables, so it might have a unique USB cable, get a big Ziploc bag, I put it in. So my routers, my SATA docks, all of those things are in Ziploc bags in a box, so I could just pull it out and look at it. I know my wife had a bunch of cables, so in the wall unit where the TV is in the living room, and I'm fishing through that. Finally, I remembered I had a Roku in the closet that we're not using, that I'm storing stuff in. And sure enough, the Roku 1.0 had a 5-volt, 3-amp, or 2-amp. I think the upboard wants 3 amps, but I think this was only 2 amps. 5-volt, 2-amp, 5.5mm jack. So I was able to get it powered up. So they sell a very reasonably priced jack, wall wart. I think it was like $7. You can get one on Amazon, which I ended up doing. So there's another bad thing. I'm saying three bad things. I'm not trying to hit on it as bad, but okay. Pretty much they hit you up for $24 shipping. Now this is coming from the Netherlands, and it's like $1.50 for each additional one. So I'm like, that's a pretty big nut on a $120 board to swallow 25% shipping. So when I was filling out the form online, I'm like, well, if I up it to two, what's it like? And, you know, so it was like $24.75. I'm like, I'll get two. I'm like, well, I'd like two. It's really not the budget, but, you know, let me see if Dora wants one. So I sent him one. The board has your standard 40-pin bus, like a Raspberry Pi. It's got the 4 USB 2.0 and a gig Ethernet. I haven't speed tested it, but I'm assuming it's Intel that it's got a real gig Ethernet, as opposed to like my Banana Pi Pro that, quote-unquote, has a gig Ethernet. It's got USB 3.0 OTG, which is really nice because you can plug USB 3 hard drives in, which I would take a USB 3 hard drive or a SATA drive. In my mind, if you're communicating gig Ethernet, those things are pretty level. I don't know the actual speeds, but from a user endpoint, I haven't seen an issue with it. So SATA or USB 3.0, I'm happy with. It's got a full-size HDMI port. Oh, okay, another ding on it. I already mentioned it. No audio jack. I think it's got like 3 LEDs that are user-controlled, if you care about that stuff. There's a bunch of other ports. It's got a real-time clock. The thing that is the least professional about the board, and I'm pointing that out because I think it's really well done, really professionally done, is it's got a coin cell shrink-wrapped, double-sided tape to like the Ethernet port, and that's the real-time clock. So that when something is... I'm very impressed with this, if it hasn't sounded that way. Very excited about getting it, using it. I don't know when it's been powered off, but it's pretty much been powered on for like not quite a full week yet, because I got it last Friday. Very happy with it. And I, like I out of the box type, like, let me install Crash Plan. Crash Plan installed. You know, pretty much you run the shell script, boom, it installs. Anything you can do with your regular x86 Linux computer, you can do with this. So that was just really cool. And what I'd recommend, if you're listening to me and you want to get one of these, buddy up with somebody, find somebody else that wants one, because so you don't take the big ding on the $24 shipping. You know, buy more than one, share them with a friend.
Right. Yep. And I'll say, okay, the power plug is $11. It isn't expensive. The only thing I didn't like about their store and that plug was they never showed you explicitly the barrel connector.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, whoa, what's that? You know, because I'm like, all right, Ethernet cable. Okay, check. I downloaded the UB Linux. Okay, check. It's like, what?
Yeah, and I did catch some flack when I said this the very first time, but barrel jacks on these boards are the stupidest idea ever, and it's mainly not because of the barrel jack, but because there's no standard one barrel jack. There's literally like 12 different ones they could pick to use.
Absolutely.
And, you know, stick to something that everyone knows. Honestly, if you can't do micro USB because of the
power
USB
requirements
3,
or whatever, yeah.
Right, then go USB-C or something else standard, not a stupid... That, to me, that's the biggest gripe with this board, and it's because I don't have the plug to plug it up right
so
now.
On Amazon, I got the Wallwart. It's a 5.5 by 2.1 millimeter barrel connector for, where is it, $9.49.
Yeah, and to be honest, I'm cool with paying that. I'm cool with getting that. And I'll say this. I'm going to try to beat this up. I want to see if I can make this like a portable computer in my pocket to take around to work and, you know, upstairs, plug up to the TV when the kids go to bed, and make it literally like a portable type computer. And I'm going to stick with their version of Ubuntu Linux, Ubi Linux, just because that's where I feel, I think, the most comfortable. But this makes me really excited for the Upboard Squared.
Right, right. And I'm kind of jonesing for that. I think you talked about it on one of your podcasts, right?
Last week?
Yeah. Last week or the week before. And to me, the only bad thing about that is we have to wait 5 months. We have to wait till March, I believe it is, for the Up Squared to come out, which really, really, really sucks, because little doubt in my mind, it's only going to get better.
Yes. Yeah, I...
You know, the hardware is going to get more refined. It's just going to be a more solid.
It sounds like from your experience, Rich, if you definitely had two, that it would have been sufficient enough for you. You know, being a power user, you can have one downloading 4 or 5 torrents and doing some real work on another device.
So here's what I'm thinking. I'm running around with my portable VMware data center in a backpack. So I have two NUCs. One is a i5 with 32 gigs of RAM and a 250 gig SSD. And I think I got it on Amazon for about $585. The other NUC, it's a Celeron NUC and has 8 gigs of RAM and a 500 gig SSD. I've got a 5-port gigabit switch that I plug them into. So what I'm thinking about is, you know what? I could just have that running. I could plug them in, and they pull like 42 watts, next to nothing. That could be where all of the RAM and the storage is, and I could just use, you know, run it as a VM. So I could run the Upboard as my desktop computer and, you know, just spin up a VM of whatever I need.
Yeah, I mean, you have everything that you need right there. You have the bandwidth, you have the throughput, you have the RAM, you have the processor, you have the NICs.
Yep.
And all of that with that low power utilization, I don't think people really understand. To me, that's the biggest jump we've made in technology in the last 10, 15 years. The amount of power needed to run all this being as little, we're back in the day. I mean, you know, it would have taken a room, you know, 16 feet by 16 feet to have this type of power to it. And now we're able to do it, you know, off of a portable, like, battery pack almost.
Well, see, now that's where I want to be, is what I want to do is set up, like, a toolbox, a lunchbox, a something with my VMware data center in it. And you could you could put a couple of lipos in there or a gel cell and a couple of DC to DC converters for whatever. Like, I think the power input into the Nooks is 19 volts DC. So you literally could run everything off a backpack. I mean, off a battery pack in a lunchbox, toolbox, whatever it may be.
That's amazing.
Put solar panels on the top, nice. You know? And see, for me, I'm not Mr. Green. I'm not a greenie. I do believe we need to be good shepherds of our environment. If it's the difference in the power between me running my tower or me running a couple of Nooks or something like that, I really don't care about the power part. That's not my major focus. For me, it's the noise and the heat. That's the big thing. I'll take the hit on the power. Not like I like it, but heck, if I can do everything or better with this setup, I'm game. I'm in.
Yeah, absolutely.
I agree. Very good stuff. And if people want to, you can go to either up-shop.org, up-board.org, or the other one was up-community.org. These people are trying to do a very good site, very filled site, good wiki, good downloads. They have an active forum. And I'm going to say their hardware is only going to get better, and it's good right now. So I definitely expect it in a year, upboards to be even more popular than they are now. Hopefully they can keep the price from skyrocketing, because that upboard too, I can see myself getting maybe one or two of those things. Just because.
Okay, what's the price on the upboard too right now? They're doing is it an Indiegogo, or are they doing some sort of fundraiser? Kickstarter, that's it.
Yeah, it is a Kickstarter. I want to say the starting price was $80 for the lowest one.
I'm scrolling around.
Yeah, you got to go to Kickstarter Up Squared, this is part of the problem, the naming convention to it. The lowest low end, if you get in, $98 for the Up 2 Celeron. That's with quad core, 2 gigs of RAM, 16 gig eMMC. Their highest version, at least on their pledging status, I want to say it was $200.
I see a 218. So
that sounds right. Yeah.
I thought they had more than 4 gigs of RAM. So this is an Apollo Lake, 2.5 quad core, and 4 gigs of RAM and 32 gigs of eMMC.
Okay.
Oh, all right. They have an 8 gig. All right. So the 251 is 8 gigs of RAM. So I would, I definitely would want to buy as much as I can. The 8 gigs of RAM really interests me. 250, all right, so that I get a motherboard, I get my RAM, I just need some additional storage maybe, and that's stink cheap.
Yeah, and the onboard storage goes up to 128 gig MMC. Some people complain about 16 to 32 gig. And I understand why they complain, okay? I understand why they complain. Me, no complaint. Me, 16, fine. Don't need more than that. But 128, I don't know what you can't do with 8 gigs of RAM, 128 gigs of onboard storage, and with the quad-core Pentium. It isn't a Celeron chip on it. I mean, that's kind of crazy.
Yeah, that's the Apollo Lake. So 2.5 gigahertz quad-core. April 2017.
I know. I know that's the thing. April.
I don't, maybe after Christmas, if I have any money, I'll throw in for that. I don't know how long their fund Kickstarter
30, 37 days to go. That's cutting it close.
Yeah. If some money falls in my lap, I definitely plunk the 250 down on that.
Yeah. And I'll say, if you just go to their Kickstarter page, look at the image on the top of the freeze frame of the video.
Yeah.
They have one in a case. And I got to say, it looks like a very professional case. I mean, if I went into a business someplace and I saw that, right, I wouldn't think, what's that half-baked custom hack job? I would think, wow, that's a nice little box you got there. What is that?
That's what I was going to ask too, which is if you have a case for yours, and if so, what are you using?
Ah, okay. I almost had a case for mine.
Yeah.
I got the Prusa i3 from GearBest. And the odd thing was, Joe Hecht and I think ordered them at the same time, and Joe I think got his like 3 days later. Mine, you know, like a week plus passed. I wasn't really, you know, timing it, but I'm like, hey, you know, my order hasn't updated. Like you see, it's like, you know, processing, and it was just saying processing. So I sent him an email, and it, you know, I guess it's Hong Kong and they don't speak good English. And I got some pleasantly worded but kind of vague email back. And I'm like, maybe that's just what they say. I don't know. And I saw it went to, basically the bar moved like a notch or two over. And the last thing was dispatch. And sure enough, it went to dispatch like the next morning. And then I got an email from DHL and it was going to be here Monday morning. You know, and that was Friday. I'm like, stink fast. That's 3 days shipping. That's crazy. And sure enough, it was here. And, or, oh, I'm sorry. Wait, no, I got that wrong. That was something else. But I got it Friday. That, I'm sorry, printer. I'm confusing with Upboard. Yeah. All right. So, yeah, the printer I got Monday 2 o'clock and it said it was shipping on Friday. So it came DHL, flew into Ohio, down to Miami, to Boca, and then boom, to my doorstep. And I've been putting the thing together, and I went to bed 3 a.m. last night. I printed a test print, and it worked good. I'm not going to detail my mistakes assembling it, but there were a couple of videos, and there's multiple versions, and I guess multiple production runs, and they change things between production runs. And if I actually opened the PDF that came on the thumb drive they sent me, I would have seen what to do and how, so I wouldn't have made those mistakes that I made. But all in all, I got it running. Any faults or flaws were my own. So I was trying to print a very cool Upboard case, and you know, I had filament feed problems, a couple of issues. I bumped up the temperature, and then I got a puddle of you know, the filament, the media on the end of the. So I'm just kind of going through it, and moments before we started the podcast, because what I've been doing, the way I've been operating, there's two ways you can operate the printer. You can operate the printer by copying the files you want to print onto the SD card. There's a little scoreboard, LCD scoreboard, and like five buttons, and you can navigate through the menu and print things. Or you can hook it up to a device, and the device could be a Pi, and there's OctoPi. And so it's a Raspbian distro and, you know, web server, etc. So here's the cool thing. OctoPi, you can plug in the Raspberry Pi camera or you can plug in any old webcam. So I grabbed the Logitech webcam that my father-in-law gifted me after he got a iMac to need the camera. And that, you know, I didn't have to configure it. I didn't have to select it. I just went to the GUI and boom, there it was. You know, there was the image on the display. So kind of shocked. You know, I was really shocked when I plugged it in and the light came on immediately on the webcam. I'm like, holy cow, that thing's running. So what I, now that I got everything powered properly with cables going directly to the Pi 3, I have complete control over the printer. So it's nicer if you can, you know, click a GUI interface as opposed to the push button interface and maybe a not so user-friendly menu system that could have been more friendly. But I'm hoping that I have better control over things through OctoPi and that I'll be able to have a good print on the case. So gone through a couple of stages and iterations of hardware control, etc. So that's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah, this was the printer we brought up, I believe, two episodes ago. And the good thing about the printer is that it's based on the Prusa i3. I'm learning a little bit as time goes on. That is the great-grandfather that every other 3D printer bases itself upon because it's a very upgradable or even downgradable system. If you want to, you can literally take one piece of it, take it off, upgrade that one piece, put it back on, and now you essentially have a better printer. And you can do that with all kinds of pieces and parts to it. I'll say one of the reasons that Rich got it for a deal of $155 before $30 shipping was because he had to put the whole thing together himself. And dare I ask, if you had to guess, how many individual pieces was it?
Oh, my gosh. I'd be exaggerating if I said hundreds, but there, one, let me just, if you have the ability to follow it. Now, I didn't even open the instructions until I had problems after it was fully assembled. I guessed on a few things, and one of the things was the belt attach on the print head, and I attached it on the top instead of the bottom, so it was moving in the wrong direction. Again, my fault. If I opened the PDF that came with it, it would have shown me how to do the belt attach. The video that they have on their website that I was following for the build didn't show a different method, like they had other acrylic parts to do the belt attach on the printhead. So, yeah, there are a large number of parts, and so there's, let me think, you have the three axes, so X, Y, and Z, but for the Z axis you have two stepper motors, and then there's a stepper motor for the feed on the printhead. So is that five stepper motors? So there's five stepper motors in this. There's an Arduino logic board, and then there's a power supply, big honking power supply. Because you're heating the bed and you're heating the print head as well as, moving things around. So the wiring was simple. The wires were labeled. The motors were labeled for X-axis because, the pulley is oriented a certain way for the X-axis versus the Y-axis. The cables are labeled for the motors, X-axis, Y-axis, etc. So the wiring was pretty much plug and play. The cord that goes to the wall, you had to strip the ends and, screw terminal them into the power supply. And then from the power supply to the logic board, you had to strip the ends, screw terminal them in. And there's three pairs of screw terminals on the logic board. One was power in, one was heat for the bed, and the other was heat for the nozzle. They give you some wrap for the wires, so you got to twist it around whatever the sheath is. You could use snake skin, or you could use the wire loom they use in cars, so which is a split loom that you zippy tie closed or electrical tape closed. You could use those things if you don't want to go through the time of twisting the wires around. All in all, I'm having my first print be successful and my subsequent prints not be successful. I'm still real impressed with it. I think if I adjust some settings, I'll probably get it correct. I haven't had issues with the resolution, the quality. It's feeding the material into the print head, and it's stripping on the gear, so I don't know if I have the tension too tight, too loose, and the head too hot, too cold. So those are things you got to figure out.
Yeah, that's the balancing act. It's a very careful amount of heating and cooling going on, because there's parts where you want to constantly keep at a certain hot temperature, and then there's fans running to keep things from not overheating and keeping just under that. So he has to literally just go through and just check, verify, set, check, verify, set kind of thing. Yeah, because I'm firmly believing, from everything I'm hearing, you are very close to being able to just hit print, walk away.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it was cool. Before I plugged in, and this is the Mini PC show, and I've been here a couple of times, and I got a lot of, Pi devices doing stuff in my house, and I feel like I'm Johnny Come Lately, even though it's Wednesday, and I only had the printer up and running yesterday. I probably, if I knew about Octopi 2 days ago, I probably would have had it loaded up and ready, because I had a spare Pi 3 kicking around. So yeah, I feel like Johnny Come Lately to having Octopi running, and there are a couple of people coaching me on this, and they all talked about using Octoprint, and whether it's on, your Mac, your Linux, or your PC, Octoprint will run. And I definitely a nicer setup than using the push button interface on the device.
Oh yeah, and that interface, Brian, if you know, walking up to any network printer, having to do stuff, that's what it's like. It's a pain in the butt. Enter, up, 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 enter, down, 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 enter, down, 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 enter. It's literally like that. It is that painful of an interface. With the Octoprint, Octopi stuff, you literally can be at work on your phone, click a button, send a file to the printer, have it start printing it, monitor it, camera, watch it print, and if the print starts to fail right there,
that's
say stop printing.
Extremely ideal.
Oh, yeah, and if you don't have that, you literally have to walk up to the printer with your micro SD card, slap it in, go through the menu, hit print, and literally come back in the room and constantly check on it to make sure that it's working okay. So, yeah, with the Octoprint, it's literally like setting you free.
And what I did before I ran out, I had to run some errands today, and it is the day before Thanksgiving. So for all my friends in Florida, the supermarket chain in Florida is Publix. And they'll put together a Thanksgiving dinner for you. We've been doing this for a number of years now. That's just fantastic and very tasty and very reasonably priced. Then I went to Costco to pick up, I got cheesecake and pumpkin pie. And I set up one of my Foscams. It's like an R2-D2 webcam. And I just put that on my printer. So I'm driving in my car, VPN'd into my home, and I'm watching the thing print. So that was kind of cool. Like, yeah, it's still going.
I'm like a newborn when it comes to 3D printing. I know very little.
I'm a millisecond ahead of you.
Right, and trust me when I say I'm right there as well. Two friends, Liam and Aaron, and there's also a guy in the Mattermost server. I almost find it cute, funny, the way that all three of them talk using the vernacular, like I know what the hell they're talking about. And I just sit there and go, that is impressive.
To that I say, keep going, I'll pick it up.
Right. And the goal is I am going to get one here soon. Not right now, but soon I'm going to have to get one. And yeah, of course, with the Octopi connecting. And that's really, Richard hit basically on the head. The real reason why I basically have no choice but to get one is I keep getting mini computers of all form factors, of all sizes. And I honestly don't want to spend the money on the cases that I'm seeing most of the people offer. For the main thing is I want to be able to take this, then take a like portable battery pack of my choosing, combine them together into one case. And the only way I can do that is if I 3D print it myself or pay somebody else to 3D print it.
And that's the justification. I was saying that the other day to my son. He says, Dad, when are we going to 3D printer? And I mentioned this on the show before. Probably never, because I don't have a justification for it just yet, you know?
Right.
Well, at $150, this was an impulse buy. My reasons were, you know, being able to print stuff and stuff being things like cases or, you know, adapters or something, you know, that you just can't go out and get. So what I did see... I was in Seattle for 2 months, and I'm back in Seattle for another 3 months with another client, and there's a micro center there, and they had a couple of 3D printers, and because I wasn't in the market, I never really looked at them closely, and I'd always see they'd have a print, and then something would go awry. You know, I don't know if somebody leaned into the bed or what happened, or they had a bad feed with the media. I wasn't real sure. So now I'm understanding the issues, and there are some subtleties on 3D printing, on how to lay the material down, how to prepare the surface for the material, and there's different techniques. So it is a bit of a learning curve. I'll get there.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing, if I really wanted to, I could just walk up to a 3D printer, blow right below the head, and right there I caused a anomaly in the printing where, you know, somebody who knows what they're looking at will look at it and say, what went wrong here? They're definitely touchy. There is one thing I did want to bring up in the notes before we go. It was line 298, and I don't know if you guys had a chance to look at this. It's really linking to 299. 299 is a real thing, which is an Ally Express link. We talked about the upboard to all these mini computers. This one is one that Joe Heck sent me a link to, and it was a guy doing a cluster of these And I looked at it, and I thought, oh, okay. This is a fanless Ubuntu 14.04 Intel PC stick, okay? And it's a PC stick StarCloud PC G02U mini PC Bay Trail, 2 gig of RAM, DDR3, 32 gig eMMC, HDMI LAN, and Wi-Fi. It's really hard to get smaller than this thing and have, be a full-fledged computer. I looked, I did not see exact specs on the length, width, height of this mini stick computer, but I got to tell people, this is literally crazy how small this thing is. And I was very tempted, not going to lie, very tempted to get one, but I did not pull the trigger. It's just over $100, I believe, from Alibaba.
So he's got five of these things. It looks like he's got a multiple USB powering, because it looks like, so the orange Intel sticks are on top, then below that is the power supply, the USB power supply, so it's got five ports on it, and then below that it looks like he's got a five port or so gig Ethernet switch,
and they're all attached to one another. This is a
He's running them as a Kubernetes cluster, which, you know, I'm going to say, tip my hat, because that's ridiculous. If you scroll down a lot on this page, because in typically Alibaba fashion, there's too much information on the page. It's 115 millimeters by 49 millimeters by 16.5 millimeters. This is literally slightly bigger than a, like a classic, two-year-old thumb drive USB memory stick. This is literally just a little bit bigger than that because of the NIC that's in it. It's a little bit fatter than it as well. And, of course, it has the Wi-Fi and antenna
Ethernet
option on it.
I see a little message here at the AliExpress site. This item is no longer available.
Well, that's good. No, that's good. Then I can't get it, even if I wanted to get it.
Well, you probably can't get it there.
That's good. That's good. Yeah.
My only downside on this is 2 gigs of memory. Now, if we were into the 8 gig of RAM or better, then we're talking.
I think starting off at 4.
Yeah, 4, 8.
Well, yeah, I do agree. Two is one of those things, you know, that's like going up to the bar and getting one beer.
Yeah.
It gives you a taste. It gives you a good idea of what, but wouldn't you like to have a little bit more?
Wait a second. All right, so it says it was 109. I just clicked on. It says 69. Yeah.
69.
3 days left. What do you mean that you said it wasn't available?
Yeah.
Scroll down a little bit further.
I got to go down.
Bundle. Sorry, this item is no longer
available. Ow.
It's literally like an inch down.
Huh. Well, $69. Did they blow them out?
My guess is, yeah. Because they dropped the price, people just went crazy. Because I'm going to tell you, if I saw it for $69, I'm pretty sure I would have got it. Then I would have made an excuse of why I couldn't pass it up. I just had
to have it.
Look at that price.
We all got to have these things. Yeah, now if I do a search, I can find it again for $109.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the exact same. 2 gigs of RAM, 32 gig. Same exact thing. And they call it a UT Tomahawk. Y-U-T-I Tomahawk. But same thing. Okay. I gotta stop looking at these things.
No. You gotta stock up for next Ohio Linux Fest. Yeah.
I know.
You gotta buy stuff to give away. Man.
That was crazy. Okay. Were there any other things you guys saw in the notes you wanted to talk about? Anyone?
Not off the top of my head, Dor. There was a project that I wanted to put together, but I don't know if I have time for it. It was the touchscreen wall-mounted family sink center. It was a little a little instructable. I found on Instructables. Just thought it was really, really cool. It was in one of the department stores the other day, and I noticed the you guys see these refrigerators with the huge touchscreens.
Oh, yeah, it's a $4,000 refrigerator.
To spend that much money on a refrigerator. But I'm looking at it, and I'm like, you know what? They have to make these panels for the monitors.
Right.
why can't I just get the panel myself and put it where I want it? You know, exactly.
Put a pie
exactly.
on it.
Go whatever OS I want on it, you know, and or device. So I haven't fully read through the Instructable just yet. He's got some items on here where I'm not really too keen about. One of them is the mini PC, the Windows 8.1 mini PC that he chose.
So here's the thing that drives me crazy about that refrigerator, is the idea that it may not be supported. Like, you know, you buy a router, it's like, oh, let me check if there's a firmware update. Well, yeah, within, you know, 18 months of the thing being new on the market, there may right. be a firmware update.
Yep.
And that's it. You're not getting another. So what about when these refrigerators become orphaned as far as support, or that there's a security vulnerability in it, and now you're getting porn on your refrigerator, and you got to explain that to your kids? But, huh? Oh, what happened there? Could you imagine? You know, you don't have any control over that device.
Right.
It's a refrigerator. I mean, do you paint it black? You get a spray can out? What do you do? That's why I like, that's exact. When I saw that, I'm walking by it in Best Buy. I'm like, $4,000? I'm like, you're out of your fucking mind. I'm like, I wanted to find the rep and shake him. You know, it's like, what idiot buys that? And my first thought is like, I'm going to get a couple of maggots. I'm going to get, you know, a tablet or something and just stick it on my refrigerator, or, you know, a Raspberry Pi. Exactly that thought, because I
right.
want to be in control of it. I want to handle updates on it. I don't want to wait for the manufacturer or have the manufacturer orphan me. You know, that's hell no. I'm $4,000 into a fridge that doesn't work. You know, Spotify doesn't work on it anymore because they went to Spotify version X plus one, and it doesn't support my, you know, whatever brand X refrigerator.
Yeah, and I'll say, you just hinted at one of the biggest things. Because Brian's talking about getting a screen. The problem is, I can't find on you anything close to an affordable screen. It seems like the only option I've ever seen that's economical is exactly what Richard said. Getting a economical, cheap, $20, $30, $40 tablet and basically using that as your screen. Because everything else is just too expensive.
Yeah, the one in the Instructable here is a 17-inch screen. And it's kind of, that's a little too small. You'd want it a little bit bigger, at least 24-inch.
Really? If you got a double-door refrigerator, you know, vertical double-door.
Big screen on a fridge.
What are you going to do with your oven and toaster, you know? You put a 7-inch screen on your toaster, right?
You can do it vertical.
Yeah.
You don't have to slide it horizontal. You can do it vertically.
So I'm cool on the DIY. The next thing is, realistically, we use our TV more for, first off, we don't watch live TV. And every once in a while I turn on live TV, like, why the hell did I turn that on? There's 20 minutes of commercial and no show. I'm like, F that. And during the week, we probably stream iHeartRadio off the TV more than we're playing video on it. So I don't know that I need a $4,000 refrigerator to do that.
More so to family activities, what's for dinner, pictures, you know.
I like it. That's good. That works. Yeah, I mean, if you have a Google Doc for, like, what to buy at the grocery store, that's cool. You know, some common items. I'll tell you what I wouldn't mind doing is, like, if you had a tablet and use the camera as a barcode scanner. So you, like, hold it up, like, you push a button, buy more, and you hold it up, milk, or half and half, or eggs, and it barcode scan it. And then it syncs up with everybody's to-do list on shopping. It's like, so now if this was a perfect world, like you had IFT running on your phone or something, and as my wife is coming home from work and she rounds the corner and drives by the supermarket, it lets her know, like, hey, we need milk or we need bacon. Pick it up.
That would be ideal.
Yeah, I will say, I am going to work Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I'm off again Monday because of a doctor's appointment. You mentioned that, Rich. I think this weekend I'm actually going to be able to find time to play with at least a little bit. Trigger Happy and Node Red. Those were the two locally installable, if this then that type servers. And I'm going to try to get the chance to play with them a little bit. I love the idea of semi-automation being, you know, a trigger causing an event, causing other things to happen. So I'm going to try to play with both of them and see if I can get some activities going, because that would be really cool.
So I got a personal hit list, and I don't even have Node-RED on my hit list. I've been crossing things off as I've been hitting on them. Yeah, I want to do Node-RED. And I was interested, and you talked a while back about, was it Hugin? I just couldn't get that to run. It was supposed to be like a personal ift.
Yeah. Yeah, that one seemed big. I'll say Node-RED. Here's how you know Node-RED is more mature.
IBM?
Than that one. No. You just go on YouTube, Node-RED, and you will find complete a bunch of half-hour-long mm-hmm. videos of people explaining how they set everything up. So you know this is a system that can work. Happy Trigger doesn't seem as robust, but it seems a little bit easier to program against, I'll say.
Yeah, there.
And it's a good name.
And, you know, talking about, I have an idea of what I want to do for home automation and what home automation means to me. And while I'm on that journey, I bought TCP Connected Lighting, which got orphaned. You know, the web interface to IFT doesn't exist anymore. And somebody wrote one. I had it running on a VM, and I don't know where the VM is. I think it's on my Mac here. And, you know, it's like, okay, proof of concept, it ran, boom, good, fine. And I haven't done anything with it. I really need to transfer that off to a Pi device and the home automation server. And it's funny, Dor sent me a Orange Pi PC, and he's like, burn it up. And the funny thing is, at idle, this thing wow. is hot. So I put heat sinks on it. I'm running Observium on it in Home Automation Assistant, and the thing is not failing. I'm a little pissed that I wanted it to fail. So along with, I've got a whole bunch of things I want to stitch together, and whether that's IFT or Node-RED with Home Automation Assistant, with the replacement for the TCP controlled lighting, because that handled the scheduling, and the scheduling was important to me because then I can have lights go on and off in the house whether I'm home or not, and give it the appearance that I'm home, or better yet, that as I'm coming home, when it's dark, turn on the lights so I don't come home to a dark house.
Yeah, see, and the reason I like this kind of system is because then, okay, the way to avoid low-hanging fruit is to not do what everyone else does.
Right.
So hypothetically, if Richard does all this, he could inject a random seed between, on any of these actions, between, you know, 1 second and 45 seconds, or 1 and 5 minutes. So even if he's gone for 2 weeks, his lights can come on at a slightly different time every night. You know what I mean? This is the kind of power control you get when you do it yourself. When you trust somebody else, you either don't get these options or you get the same options everyone else has, i.e. everyone's going to already know it. Oh, his lights came on 3 minutes different. That means he's using this service. You know, when you roll it yourself, you get a little bit more protection in my mind.
Now, what do you guys think of, I know this is the mini PC show, not the home automation show, but I know we're on the topic, but what do you think of the door locks?
I think suckers use them.
Yeah, it scares the heck out of me. So I have the keypad for my garage door, right. The overhead door. So my daughter, when she comes home, and my father-in-law most of the time will drive her home. So his remote I synced up with my garage so he can open it. But say Skylar comes home whenever and just a friend drops her off. She can enter the keypad in. Now, the passage door getting into the house, there's a keypad for it, but it's not Wi-Fi. So we can, typically, we keylessly enter the house. And again, after that is the alarm, which again is a keypad. So basically, there's three keypads to get into the house. You know, the overhead door, the passage door, and then the alarm. And I kind of like that, but if there's a power failure, the overhead door, the garage isn't going to work. The door, the passage door, is powered by batteries, which is fine. So, yeah, I'm still walking around with the physical mechanical legacy key because there are two doors on the house I'd have to be able to enter or exit if we had no
power.
Now,
when you have no power, do they lock automatically or do they go into unlock state automatically?
Well, now, the passage door is powered by four AA batteries, so it doesn't know anything about power on or off. And the overhead garage door, a lot of the overhead garage doors now have a gel cell battery with them. So if you get a modern one, it'll open or close I don't know how many times before the battery goes out. So at least you're able, like if you're doing what I'm doing, you're able to get into the stinking house.
I'll say, I don't want to say people who use that kind of stuff is a sucker, but I'll say if you can access it from outside your network, everybody else can. I'm going to see if I can find a link. I want to say it was Bruce Schneider literally appeared in front of Congress this past week. And he was basically warning Congress to basically let everyone know the Goldilocks days are gone. We're in a different era now. We have, you know, the blind fun, the taking hallucinogenics and dancing on the field and running across the beaches. Free living is over. It's done. We now live in a completely different era. And I'll put the link right here for you guys inside here. He basically says the internet era of fun and game is over. Now we have things online that if people hack in the wrong way, people will die. Lots of people will die. We have very important systems and subsystems all over the place on this public-facing internet, and it's not good. And honestly, I'm not a doom and gloom kind of guy, but I'll say I agree with him. I think he's right, and I think we have to take things more serious now before we have no choice but to take it more serious.
No, I agree later. With that. There's certain ways where you could... where you could do it where it doesn't become a security risk. But I go to a lot of data centers and a lot of IT closets, a lot of IT rooms and so forth. And the majority of them are badge access only, you know. And with badge access, you can also have remote unlock. You know, you can unlock the door from another location, from within the building. That doesn't necessarily mean that it has access from outside the building. You know, off network, there you go, with the RSA token. So yeah, that's the reason why I asked. So if I could put a badge access on a IT room and lock it down and still can get into it remotely, why can't I do that in my house?
Yeah, you can. In some place, there's a bunch of different ways of access. And I know a buddy of mine, company he works for, it used to be Dallas Semiconductor. Who they get by bought by? Was it Microchip bought Dallas Semi? It's the iButton. So they have an iButton key fob. Looks like a coin cell battery. And there's a socket that'll unlock the door and that kind of thing. Here's my philosophy. One, like the webcams I have in my house, They all want to upload to some cloud right. When you get them out of the box. You got to turn those features off. You want to have the latest firmware on your webcams. The other thing is consider if you have a good quality router, blocking its internet access that it can't phone home or phone out, period. Now, the only port I have open on my router is 4242 for CrashPlan. So if I'm traveling, my laptop will back up to my home. And really, that's the only use case for that. The only other way that my home network, gets shared is through OpenVPN. So I have OpenVPN on my laptop and on my phone. So while I was driving around today looking at the webcam, I was connected via OpenVPN looking at the webcam and the 3D printer.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Right now, I have a couple of things open to the public-facing internet, but it's my own cloud instance, and there's something else here I can't even think of. And when I come across security people that I know are smarter than me, that tell me how stupid I am for doing this, I then give them my home WAN IP address and say, then hack me, and put on any of the folders on any of the computers a file. And then you email me, here's my email address, and tell me where that file is. Okay? Because I'm no security expert. I don't claim to be a security expert. I know there's an easy way to be secure, and that's to say no. The easiest security in the world. When someone says, hey, Dad, can I do this? No. Hey, Dad, how about a Minecraft server so, Bobby can connect to it? No. You know, just say no. It's the best security in the world. I have my own cloud instance I have it monitored, I'll say. Every bit that comes off of that NIC on back onto my network, I have audited and I have a record of it on a different computer. And for the person who gets into my house, if that's the way they get in, it's going to take them at least a little while to figure that out. But whenever there's something triggered, I get an immediate email about it. So I'm pretty sure I'm going to know they're on my network before they know that I know they're on my network, kind of thing. We have a choice. We either can buy a Ring video doorbell and just remain blissfully ignorant and have faith that this company that doesn't care anything about us is going to have our back, and they love us, and they're going to care for us, and they're going to make sure we're safe. Or we can be domain administrators on our own network. To me, there's no ifs, ands, or buts. You are either a domain administrator on your network, or you have no security on your network. You're literally just guessing. You're just trusting blind faith some corporation to have your back. And I can't do that.
That's foolishness. I wouldn't recommend anyone to do that.
Okay. We had a lot of stuff here. Richard, first off, I want to thank you for coming out. But let's first, I can't believe this. Why were you able to come out to this show tonight, Richard? Because you typically can't come out to every show.
Oh, well, we weren't recording Tilts tonight. Everybody.
What is this Tilt you speak of?
We weren't recording the Linux Link Tech show tonight. So I'm out here and I was available. And I figured I like talking mini PCs and I had a number of things to talk about.
What is the Linux Link Tech
Show? Linux Link Tech Show is, I believe, the world's longest running Linux podcast. And we've been around, we're show 670 something right now, I think. And I've been doing that for a number of years. And actually, that's how I met you, Dor.
Well, I'll say this. My wife, you might say it's the longest running podcast. My wife tells me size means nothing. So you can be on the longest running one. That's okay. It's a really good show with really nice guys. I encourage everyone, please go check it out. What's the URL again?
Let's see. Is it tilts.org or is it tech show?
I believe it's tilts.org. Or in your podcatcher of choice, just search for TLLTS.
It's TLLTS.org. And we're on iTunes, and you'd find us pretty much anywhere. If you Google for Tilts, you'll find it.
Yep, even on the Microsoft Zune store.
I still have one.
Pretty sure. and everyone I know that has had one swears by it. Brian, how can people
Google
hook
Plus.
Up with you?
Ask the cable guy.
Not Tinder?
No, not Tinder. My wife would kill me. We would have words. No, definitely not on Tinder. You can find me on Google Plus, Ask the Cable Guy.
Very cool. And I want to publicly say, Richard, thank you for the upboard. Tomorrow night, I think I may... Oh, man, I'm so stupid. I think tomorrow night, after we eat dinner, the wife wants to go out for early...
Movie?
Black Friday shopping.
Uh-oh.
If she says one of the places where they might have a multi... a plug socket thing, I might actually go. Just so I can get the damn plug for this upboard so I can plug it up and have it getting going. And the only thing I want to ask people, seriously, two things. One, if you can support us, just go to podus.com/Amazon. We get a very small percentage. But much, much more important, okay? This is the time of year, and I say this in every year, at least on one show, where really bad things seem to happen. Take time out of your day once in a while. Contact the people you know and remind them that you love them and be there for them. And check up on them and just make sure everything's okay. Because this is a bad time of year. This is when bad things happen to good people. Me and Richard know of a guy right now. I want to say he's less than 35 years old. He's in a hospice. That's not good. Okay? Not good. I didn't get a chance to hang out with him in the last year and a half, and it was completely my fault. Don't let that happen to people out there. Keep connecting with the people that you care about, you know, you love, and keep reminding them that you're there for them. And with that, I just want to thank everyone for downloading. Thank everyone for subscribing. And definitely talk to everyone in about a week.